I'd never given much thought to how I would die. But dying in the place of someone I love seems like a good way to go. I can't bring myself to regret the decisions that brought me face to face with death. They also brought me to Edward.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Twilight Retrospective Series.
You better hold on tight, Spider Monkey.
Hosted by Jacob.
You've done us a great service, Jacob. Thank you.
Stuart.
He's not as perfect as you think.
And Arnie.
I'm surprised he took a break from Jedi training.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
If we live through this, I'll follow you anywhere, woman.
Now you tell me.
Listener discretion is advised.
The only thing that can hurt me is you.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on in, Bella. You won't bite.
Speak for yourself.
Today we're discussing The Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, Part 1, starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Billy Burke, Ashley Green, Peter Facinelli, Elizabeth Reeser, directed by Bill Condon. This is the Now Playing co-host who's not Breaking Dawn, I'm just Breaking Down, Arnie.
I might be Breaking Wind, we'll see. It's Stewart.
And this is Jacob. And before we get in the show, big news. Like, my wife and I decided, because Stuart, Arnie, you guys are such great co-hosts, if we do have a son, giving him the name now, Stoony.
I love it.
I'm honored. I'm honored. And I hope it doesn't eat her from the inside out when she gives birth to it.
But if she does, I'll be there to bite through the placenta.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay.
This is it. This is the one I've been waiting to get to. Like I told you, treading water until we get to this crazy body horror film.
Yeah, we're entering the twilight of Twilight. This is the last book, but because they got greedy, or maybe because it's a 700-page book, they said two movies.
I can tell you what it is. They only planned for four movies because they bought the rights to this when only Twilight was written. Before that was even published, the movie rights had been sold. So they're like, yeah, four books, four movies. And then, yeah, Stephanie Meyer turns in this 800-page monstrosity. And they're like, we might have to do two. Like, and again, they're like, well, let's see if the cast, because all the contracts were for four movies. Oh. They're like, we didn't write contracts for a fifth one. So let's see who will come back. And then they're like, well, we don't care who's coming back. We'll just recast. Like, we have to have a fifth movie. I think they're making too much money.
That is hilarious that they would actually have to make the very end with entirely new actors. That's hysterical. Okay.
But they're also following in the footsteps of Harry Potter, which did it first the year before with Deathly Hallows Part 1. And it always works out so great. When we reviewed Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, when we reviewed Deathly Hallows Part 1, when you take the first half of a book and completely remove its climax, those always make for the best cinematic experiences.
Arnie, Mockingjay Part 1 is the only one you recommended, just FYI. And I'm sure you regret it. It isn't the best one, I can tell you that. And yes, I do think it's strange to cut a story in half when you know, again, if it's well written or even if it's written with intent, good or bad, you know that you're going to miss, you know, the buildup. Like a part one of one half of a book is, you know, not going to give you what the author wanted to give you. So that seems like a mistake. From a story standpoint, it feels like they could have gotten both movies into one experience.
Oh, I mean, again, the mantra for this entire franchise has been just do what's in the book. Like, they don't want to offend the readers. So, yeah, I feel like I could adapt this into a two-hour, 20-minute movie. Like, but they're not going to do that because we're going to have to see the entire wedding.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And they've got to help them. Maybe their most illustrious director yet, Bill Condon, has Oscar nominations to his name. Gods and Monsters, Kinsey, Dreamgirls.
Yeah, what's interesting is they wanted an Oscar-nominated director for this last one, maybe because this one was going to be tough. I'm not sure why, just to try to give it some cred because it's so crazy.
They read the book and they said, God help us? Yeah.
I mean, Bill Condon read this book, though, and he said, I have imprinted on Twilight. I want to do this. But they also approached Sofia Coppola, Gus Van Sant, imagine that, Twilight, Breaking Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Bill Condon, he does have fantasy and horror backgrounds in his films. I mean, we talked about, what is that, Candyman New Orleans, whatever that one was called.
Farewell to the Flesh.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yes.
Yeah, he knows trash. He's done it before. This is getting back to his roots.
Yeah, he saw this as a horror film, so he's like, sure, let's do this. And why wouldn't you want to direct this? It seems like easy money for sure. Again, huge box office, over $700 million worldwide, breaking records for midnight releases. It's still bringing in all that money.
No doubt it was going to be a hit, no matter what. Again, they should be happy it's two movies because double the profits. But which version did you see? I had time for only one. I went to Amazon Prime, and it gave me two different options, a theatrical and an extended. So I just hit the extended. I don't know what I saw.
This one's real easy to know if you saw the extended one or not. Who gets the first wedding invitation? If it's Jacob, you saw the theatrical. If it's the Volturi, you've watched the extended one. This scene was cut because we're not going to get the Volturi returning until part two. So they're like, it doesn't really make sense to open with these characters. But that was the original opening. So if Volturi get that wedding invitation, you're watching an extra 6 minutes or so.
Okay. That was my curiosity, was how extended is it? Because this feels long.
And once again, because these movies have all felt long, I am staying away from extended editions. Every time I've gone to iTunes and hit play, it's given me the option, do you want more? And I've said, no, I want just the minimum. Let me do what I have to.
I don't even want this.
I say the extended in this case because you get more Michael Sheen.
Okay. Well, let's find out what we get in both cuts. Arnie, give them a plot.
Edward and Bella get married. But after taking Bella's virginity, Edward has gotten her pregnant. The fragile human isn't meant to give birth to a hybrid baby, so Bella's choice to keep the child is at the expense of her own life. The nearby wolf pack, led by Sam, wants to kill Bella and the abomination growing inside of her, but Jacob wants to protect Bella, so he leaves Sam's pack, and a couple other werewolves follow Jacob as their new alpha. The Cullens care for Bella as she has a greatly accelerated pregnancy and grows weaker and more injured day by day. The Cullens find having her drink human blood satisfies the unborn vampire and makes Bella more healthy. Finally, Bella gives birth, which has to be done by C-section. The baby girl, named Renesmee, is born healthy, but Bella dies soon after. Edward bites her and gives CPR, but Bella is unresponsive. Meanwhile, Jacob imprints on Renesmee, meaning he will do anything for that child for as long as he lives.
He loves a baby!
It's almost a chemical thing. Once he's imprinted, there's no going back, and he can never imprint on anyone else again. The wolves attack, trying to kill the baby, but due to werewolf law, because Jacob imprinted, the wolves cannot hurt the child. And to everyone's surprise, except the audience, Bella is not dead. She's resurrected as a vampire, as credits roll.
Okay, and as they start in my version, yes, I agree. You would definitely want to see Michael Sheen's reaction to anything in this series. I mean, there's going to be a lot of crazy shit. And when he gets this wedding invitation, he looks positively thrilled. I don't know why he doesn't go.
See, when I start, I get to see Taylor Lautner shirtless and wet running in the rain. And again, leading to the age-old question, where those shorts go? He's got, like, Dockers on, and then he starts transforming into Wolf. Dockers gone.
Yeah, they do a real, like, Incredible Hulk thing. Those pants are never gonna go away and pop off, like, when he's a human. He's always got them. In the book, they go in, like, long explanations how they manage their clothes. But here, it's just like, yeah, if you're human, your shorts reappear.
Works for me. Poor Jacob. So he's mad because, I don't know, he already knew Bella was gonna be a vampire, but her getting married is a bridge too far? I don't know.
Well, I think it because that's the next step to becoming a vampire.
Right, yeah. He keeps hoping that she can be won over by his wolfy charms. But sorry, Taylor, nobody thinks you're a good actor.
And then we cut to the father there, and I'm trying to figure out, I can't get it from Billy Burke's performance, but I would think that a father would be a little bit upset. Hey, my 18-year-old daughter is dating this guy who dumped her very recently so that she was having screaming fits in the night. Now they're getting married. He's got just this very cryptic look on his face as he's looking at the invitation.
Yeah, he looks resigned to me. Like, he's like, what can I do?
Yeah. And something that doesn't really, even in the extended cut, get elaborated on, but part of his grief is he was a young husband. He and Renee got married because they were teenagers that got pregnant right out of high school. So for him, and definitely for the mom, I don't think it really makes it in the movies. They think their daughter is making a terrible choice following in their footsteps. They ended in divorce, and they think the same will happen to Edward and Bella.
I would say the way they play Renee in the movie, again, her character is always, even in the books, kind of just very flighty and can't really focus on anything. And so she's just happy for her daughter here.
How much money did they spend on this? I mean, it's a lovely looking wedding, but when we cut to Renee in Florida, that looks like they made that like up in like the prop shop in about an hour, like blue screen.
Well, it should be said, like, they were very proud when they wrapped up Breaking Dawn because they filmed both halves at the same time. And they're like, we've made 5 movies in 3 years because that's what counts. Forget, yeah, artistry and all that. It's like, we got it done super fast so we could get it out annually for our fans and make that box office. But yeah, I don't know. This always feels like a set. Even when we get to the wedding, which looks beautiful, things just feel like sets to me all the time.
Mm-hmm. Tropical backgrounds worthy of public access. It just, again, it's really surprising because this series has done so well. I get that you didn't spend a lot on the first one. It was a risk. But when you know that it's a juggernaut, you're going to get your money back. I don't know. Take a week and film in Florida. Really don't make this actress pretend like she's on a beach that is made of, you know, blue screen.
They spend far too long on this wedding. This is a 2-hour movie. And we're going to spend about a half an hour just prepping for and watching the nuptials.
Yeah, my question was, besides Godfather, is there a longer wedding scene in cinema?
Good point. Yes, Godfather still wears that crown. I think it's an hour in that one. But here's the thing. I mean, this is a big buildup. This is a big significant thing for lots of reasons. You would want to spend time on this. So I get that you want to, again, you could maybe even set most of the movie here if you had things happening. What's kind of strange is there's only just a little bit of drama. Jacob's going to show up late and get mad, but by and large, it's a wedding. And in everything you would expect to happen here, there are no soap opera twists and turns. There is no shocking, stunning left at the altar kind of thing. It's just a wedding.
Yeah, no, but they try to add some tension to it before you get in there. There's a cool little nightmare, and this is where I can see you bring a horror director in. Like, Bella thinks she's at her wedding, and then the Volturi are the ones officiating, and they're standing on a pile of dead bodies. Mike at the very top, because he is the most annoying. He would be the first kill.
Mm-hmm. He is looking better, though. I feel like he's trying, you know, still trying to win her over. He cleans up nice, but still doesn't have those genetics of these vamps.
Yes. And then we get this scene, and there's a subtext, I think, to it, where Edward comes to Bella the night before the wedding and is like, I have a confession. And, like, we talked a whole lot about virginity and all that, but his confession is that he has fed on human blood. And I do feel like the subtext to that is like, yeah, I did fuck around before I met you. Like, I'm not this wholesome person you are. But she's totally cool with it because he only kills killers.
Right. It's the Dexter rule. It's the audience won't hold it against you if who you're killing are other killers. And we think he's going to attack this woman. I think it's kind of cheap. That in the end, some other vampire is about to get her, and then he goes for that instead.
I thought it was just like some rapist, maybe Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, all right, yeah, they might not even be a vampire, but it's difficult to know. No one has fangs in this, but I do think it was an opportunity for Bill Condon. Again, he made Gods and Monsters with Clive Barker, and that's all based around the director of Frankenstein. The scene takes place at the Bride of Frankenstein, so he's able to go back to something he had done before and play around there. It was kind of fun. Wish it meant more.
Yeah, I enjoyed that scene well enough. It played with my expectations because I'm like, he didn't kill good people. Oh, wait, is he really going to kill that person? Oh, no, I was right the first time. He's not going to kill anybody.
Mm-hmm. It does feel like they just want to always protect the image we have of these characters. They can never really be bad. Like, you know, he's tainted just because he's a vampire, but nobody really holds that against him. And yeah, the fact that he can't really enjoy a bite on the neck with a woman before he gets married, that just feels wussy to me.
But yes, we get to the wedding, and look, we're going to watch, I think in real time, Bella walk down the aisle with her dad to Edward, like, and I know Kristen Stewart, she seems very introverted. She has a lot of nervous energy when I watched her giving interviews. And so she acts like this, but it is funny, like in almost this slow motion, watching her do all those, just those nervous facial tics that she does as she's building up courage to approach Edward. It feels over the top, even though I know that's how she acts. It still feels over the top. I'd be disrupting this wedding with my laughs.
Well, it begs the question, does she have any second thoughts? I mean, like, that's with nightmares about all my friends are going to be thrown on a pile and it'll be a Volturi feast. You would think that maybe, again, if you wanted something dramatically exciting, she calls off the wedding or something, or just can't go through with it. You know, you'd want something big to happen in a wedding scene. And the fact that, I don't know, we do spend so much time on a pretty wedding where everything goes according to plan.
I mean, slow pans over her dress, like, this is a huge deal. They're giving the audience what they want, is my feeling. It's not what I want, but I feel like the people that paid over $700 million to see this worldwide, they're getting it.
Yeah, I don't think I spent this much time watching my own wedding video, let alone Bella's.
And Stephanie Meyer is there in the crowd, I noticed, putting her seal of approval on it.
Yes, they lock eyes. It's a real Jack Kirby Stan Lee being inserted into Reed Richards and Sue Storm's wedding in the comics. Like, creator meets creation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's who she locked eyes with? I thought that was her character's mother.
No.
No, that was Stephanie Meyer, the author, who I should say is a producer by this point. Like, she is making hand over fist because she's not just selling the rights for the stories now. She is now in the producer's chair and she is all over this set.
Well, it's worth pointing out, when an author speaks ill of a movie adaptation, it can be really bad for them. So you want to buy in. I get that you want Stephanie Meyer to be happy, and she has no reason not to be. I mean, for the most part, this series has largely stuck to what she wrote. I don't feel like there's anything for her to complain about other than maybe casting, but I'm not sure what actors could pull off some of her dialogue.
Stuart, we've read what she wrote for this book, and this book was painful, and like it blows my mind away that they're doing every single detail with this wedding. We're going to get the speeches from the best man and the best women and dances and all kinds of, like, really, I thought we were going to get this all in real time. This is going to be a 3-hour film of just wedding.
The other thing that's happening here, and it's kind of, Arnie, I'm curious to know if you've paid attention to this before. Were they in the earlier movies? There are wedding guests here that are called cousins from Alaska who are actually part of the Denali clan, and they will be important next movie more than this one. These blonde people that come in are like, we have forever to get to know you. You know, you realize they're vampires, but you're not quite sure what it means. One of them doesn't like the fact that there's werewolves at the party.
I just took it as we need some guests. I felt like it probably meant something in the book, but here it was just washing over me as all of this wedding stuff was. I'm waiting for something to happen other than spending so much time on this wedding. It really got under my skin. Like you say, there's no drama here. I know that there is an audience for a type of movie where this would happen, where it would just be this fantasy, fantastical wedding, and they could just watch it with no conflict and no drama and enjoy it. But wow, to me, that's really bad storytelling. So the first half an hour of this film is truly as torturous as going to somebody else's wedding, which I just, a Catholic wedding at that, just the worst.
I will say this, it is fun when you're doing Pygmalion. If Bella had indeed been as plain as she had been described on the page, and for most of these movies had looked homely and, you know, not photogenic, then if she had transformed, it's always very satisfying for the audience to see the My Fair Lady, oh look, she cleans up well moment. But yeah, I mean, she's got a nice dress on, but again, she's looked great in all of these movies, so there's nothing really learned at this wedding. That is the mistake.
Well, we do finally get some conflict at the wedding when Jacob shows up. You know, he's going to make a secret entrance because he's gone lone wolf at this point. But, you know, they try to make up until, okay, this is the movie for your teenage girls. Jacob gets mad at Bella because she's going to have sex with Edward as a human, and like that's dangerous, and she's into it. Like, that is why Jacob creates some conflict here.
Explain this to me. what exactly is the danger of a human screwing a vampire?
The vampires are super strong, so they could just crush you, like kill you with their strength if they get out of control. And yeah, when you're in this lustful situation, he could get caught up in the scent of her blood and just drain her at that point.
And this is what I'm most curious to know about Arnie's reaction. In the book, it's pretty clear when they go off on the honeymoon that sex with a vampire is S&M. It is 50 Shades of Grey. It is something that physically, if she didn't commit to becoming a vampire, she wouldn't last too long because it really bruises and batters the body. He's that violent against her. But I don't know, watching this movie, you would ever pick that up?
No. Here's what I got, is I kind of thought that, you know, there have always been the conversations, playground chatter, of could Superman have sex with Lois, or would, like, super sperm just blow out her back and kill her like a gun, you know? So I felt like it was probably something like that, or when we see them having sex and he crushes the bed, it's like he probably has to control his strength so he doesn't just crush her with his vampire love.
You will see in this movie, I don't know if it's extended only, he will look at a bruise under, you know, on her elbow, and he'll look at a bruise on her shoulder, and that's the implication that he beats on her when they have sex.
I mean, I don't think he's beating on her, but yeah, he is grabbing her, and because he's super strong, it's leaving bruises. That is in the theatrical cut as well, all the bruises. And when I watched this the first time, not having read any of the books, like, it stood out to me. I'm like, I can't believe this is what we're pushing in front of our girls as ideal mirrors. Like, look, I don't want to be a prude, but, like, this is S&M. Like, that's something you got to build up to, and a lot of stuff about consent and all that. And she's like, no, I'm cool with the bruises. Let's keep fucking. And, like, he's not into it anymore because she's getting hurt. Like, to me, it really stood out.
What was her reason for not becoming a vampire first? I know she says one line to Jacob about just not wanting to be run down for the honeymoon or something, but this is really ridiculous that it's a stretch that she wouldn't turn into a vampire as I'm seeing this.
She wants to have sex as a human. That's what it comes down to. She wants to know what it's like to have sex as a human, to be vulnerable. All that 50 Shades of Grey stuff is the implication. Like, there is something dangerous about being human and being with a vampire, and she wants that.
And I would add, you're right. It seems like she's being a little bit flaky. It seems like she's teasing this vampire by saying, turn me, turn me, turn me. And then when it's time, well, there's always a reason to delay. And even when they go on this honeymoon, and we'll see, she doesn't even know where they're going. They pack up, go to Rio, and then eventually wind up on some private vampire island. Like, no better place to be bit than here. She's just not going to do it. Would she ever have done it?
I mean, she doesn't even feel like she's ready for sex. Like, there, we get this whole, I guess it's supposed to be the funny montage where she goes in the bathroom to get ready, and she's shaving her legs again, and she just sees that Alice only packed her real sexy lingerie that she's ashamed to put on.
Yeah, would she ever do it? Again, if she weren't, her life weren't in jeopardy at the end of this movie, I would argue she would cling to her, you know, human virginity forever. By that, I mean she would never offer up her soul.
I think she always would go vampire, but Jacob, you talk about this outfit stuff. I was scared. I was legit scared we were going to spend 30 minutes on this honeymoon like we spent 30 minutes on the wedding. I thought it was going to be softer than softcore. When they have sex the first time, it's all like writhing backs and close-ups of faces kissing and everything. And I'm just like, dear God, please don't.
Look, I don't want the whole honeymoon, but I'm cracking up at the implications of what's going on here. That she's like into this rough sex, the bed's being broken, the goofy antics of the maids coming and having to remove the broken bed. Like, I'm shocked that this is what we're representing our young people in America at this time.
But to Arnie's point, they're not showing it. They're alluding that it's this wild fantasy that we are not allowed to see, basically. That, yes, she wakes up with feathers from the pillow all over her body, and, you know, that looks magical. We do not see the idea that this vampire is, like, rabidly slinging her around because he wants to rip open her jugular.
Well, yeah, they have to keep this PG-13. Like, you're not going to get that. But there was a lot of debate before this came out. The fans, and I think more because of the gore stuff later, but, like, the fans are like, no, this movie has to be R-rated. There's no way they're doing an R-rated young adult fiction adaptation here. But, like, one of the things someone posted online, I'm assuming, you know, a young fan of this book, it has to be R-rated, gore and guts and sex. Like, that's what they wanted. But yeah, with the sex stuff, there's no way I think they're going to go R-rated here just because of the audience that this is intended for.
They could have at least gone hard PG-13, though. This is soft PG-13.
Yeah, there's allusions to what happens. She'll go skinny dipping. They'll walk up to the bed and then the slow-mo starts and you can't really tell what's going on. It does feel just very timid, much like Bella herself. They just don't know whether they want to go here or not. And that's too bad, because I really do feel, again, it just reinforces the idea that Bella is not really ever going to commit. That for her, the fun is dangling the idea that you can have me and then pulling it back.
I'm not sure I understand that I follow you, that she won't commit to sex. I mean, there is a scene where they're playing chess, one of the many chess scenes, and she wins, and she gets to bone Edward because of it, and you find out that's a dream. I would say that's probably a wet dream from Bella, because she's so sexually frustrated at this point, because Edward won't sleep with her.
Yeah, but they've, you know, couched in this idea of actual sex is the metaphor of being turned into a vampire. And I do feel like Stephanie Meyer writes to the virgin who loves to think that they'd be a whore in bed as a fantasy, but when it all comes push to the shove, does not want to give up being a virgin because they won't be special. I mean, that was the entire original book. And I do feel like it is only because, well, two things. Her life will be in jeopardy and she will need to be turned. And two, she's worried about growing old one day and not being sexually attractive. So maybe when she's like, I don't know, 45 or something, she'll finally do it.
She was having that midlife crisis at 18. And listening to you guys cover the books, which I highly suggest everybody does, it's a really interesting look at the other side of Twilight. But hearing you guys discuss it and its relation to the author's Mormon religion, I think from the way you guys describe it, 18 is virtually over the hill.
Yeah, that seems to be the crisis anyway. That seems to be the perspective.
I will say this, Stuart, as far as does she really want to have sex or not? I think there is...
Does she want to be turned? That's what I'm really... I won't say sex.
Whether she wants to be turned or not, and if that's a metaphor for sex, I do think there is a common tendency in the Mormon religion and probably other, you know, very evangelical religions that push, like, strong chastity that, like, yes, you're supposed to be this pure virgin until you get married, and then you could be a whore in bed. And that does cause a lot of conflicts, especially with women who said, no, I was supposed to guard my body my whole life. So, yeah, I do think you might see some of that in Bella's actions here.
Yeah, I definitely feel like this dramatizes that conundrum of, I want it, but I also feel like I won't be special. I won't be me after it happens. And yeah, she's certainly eating strangely. I've got to say, like, I don't remember from the book any recipes about raw chicken and peanut butter and strawberries.
Yeah, she's eating eggs all the time in the book, but you only get that if you watch the extended cut, her love for eggs when she's pregnant. But here, I think the fake out is, yeah, she eats some chicken, she cooks it up, and she sees that blood, like, in the bone marrow or whatnot, and gets sick, and you're supposed to think it's because of her aversion for blood that she got sick, but nope.
No, I never thought that.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, because this is such a common trope in movie language, like, when the woman runs to the toilet to throw up, if she hasn't been drinking, it's because she's pregnant.
I would say if she's eating bloody chicken, she probably has, you know, trichinosis or
E. coli or
something. Yeah, exactly. Something like food poisoning.
She had just taken a bite out of it, though.
Yeah, the vomiting, I'm like, okay, she's pregnant. That's all I need to know. It goes back to nobody sniffles in a movie without being dead from some plague later on. And so here, I'm like, okay, she's pregnant, and that's why they kept her human. I guess vampire on vampire sex is always sterile.
Yes.
Keep in mind, the Cullen family are not biologically related. The brothers and sisters, you have to go out and make your family by picking people. You can't have a baby. And there's a little bit more to it than that. Mortal children will be discussed next movie. But yes, there's no way for a vampire to reproduce in the human way. So this is an unexplained phenomenon that she is now carrying Edward's child.
And this is the other question I had. This is unusual, right? This is like the Christ baby. This is like the equivalent of a virgin birth that a vampire could impregnate a human.
Yeah, we'll get more next week, but this is a very rare thing that, yeah, usually the baby would just kill the mom. I mean, we'll see that in this movie. Like, unless you have like a super cool vampire doctor to take care of you, Bella would probably be dead.
Yeah, it's at least like an albino tiger or something like it. It happens so rarely, no one really in vampire lore knows about it. It's not thought to be medically possible.
But we do, again, we have this Brazilian couple that's like the maid for this house, and that woman, like, she suspects Edward's a vampire. And I do love this scene as a horror movie thing. Is like, they ask the maid, like, what should we do? When they find out she's pregnant, she walks up and feels the belly and says whatever Portuguese for death is.
Although, hold that thought about her, because she'll be identified as a Tucuna woman, and the Tucuna people are going to be really important next movie. I'll just save it at that. I think we're supposed to think that she's superstitious and anti-vampire, but in fact, she may be harboring the key. Anyway, Jacob is, you know, back at the beach, fuming, wondering what cover story they're going to give, because, again, the idea is that Bella is not going to come back alive from this honeymoon. They're going to have to call Charlie and Renee and tell them something. You know, she fell off a cliff. She, you know, she's clumsy enough. You know, it's believable that their daughter died while on holiday.
Was I the only one hoping for a hold on spider monkey callback when Edward is running around the jungle with her on his back and leaping off the waterfall? Yes, the clumsiness. They're certainly doing death-defying things, but I thought spider monkey was his little pet name for her.
No, unfortunately. Like, I wish we got some more baseball throughout this franchise. Yes.
Yeah. They smuggle her home because she's already got a baby bump, and it's only been a matter of days, maybe even hours, since she's been impregnated. They need the vampires to check her out. Fortunately, Carlisle is a doctor, but he isn't much help here.
Yeah, they can't get an ultrasound of the baby because it's a vampire, so like it's able to block all their tools. They can't get any injections in there. They don't know what's growing in her.
But it's growing fast. She's, what, a couple weeks pregnant and she's looking 9 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even Alice, who has been, you know, I feel like the author's go-to. Whenever I need the characters to know something and there's no reason for them to know it,
yes.
Alice will just have a premonition and they'll know it. And she can't see a future for Bella or this child. So everyone is scared about risk to mother at this point. Should they abort? Should they do something to medically at least save Bella's life? These were discussed a little bit more in detail in the book than here.
But you are going to get that, like, Alice is going to call it a fetus and Rosalie's going to call it a baby. And yeah, I know this movie got some criticism because it feels very pro-life, even if the mother's going to die, like, got to have that baby. They try to have some kind of debate here.
Yeah, and Jacob ends up siding with the vampires, ultimately. He is, you would think that he would take the stance of save Bella at all costs, but he makes a deal with Edward, and more or less, when his wolf friends want to kill Bella, he's on the vampire side. And some really bad effects. I gotta say, like, the wolves have always been a little bit dodgy, but these look particularly glitchy here.
I don't know. They look about as bad as always to me.
I think it is something. They have this meeting in the lumberyard with Jacob confronting Sam, the alpha. And I remember just losing it when I saw this in the theaters because it's just dogs. They're not talking. It's not a Disney film where their mouths are moving. It's just psychic, you know, readings of each other's minds. So you have these voiceovers where dogs just stare at each other. And yeah, it is so bizarre. Like the special effects guys were like, we got to put mud on the wolf's paws in this film. They're super proud of that. But I ain't paying attention to no mud because I'm cracking up at just how awkward this scene is. Again, watching this, knowing nothing about the lore when I originally did, just wolves staring at each other with voices coming out of them. It's bizarre.
It's a bad choice because the wolves look terrible. And listen, I've said that Robert Pattinson makes Taylor Lautner look good by comparison, but here Taylor Lautner is dropping the ball hard. But still, he's better than these wolves. They should have just had like they did in part two, a whole bunch of topless guys just kind of yelling at each other versus this wolf scene.
Would that be better? Again, I'm not sure how you dramatically make this work. Part of the problem is, because they've split the book in half, this has to be the dramatic thrust. The climax of this movie is that these wolves want to break into the Cullen house before Bella gives birth. And that's just not a particularly dramatic story, but it's all that they got.
And what's weird with the books is it's divided into three sections, and it's always been Bella narrating these books. In the second section of Breaking Dawn, it turns over to Jacob, and I could feel the Jacob narration parts in this film, knowing like that's how the book works, and that's when the book really slows down, and that's when this film has the most problem, is when it's got to be Jacob focused.
I don't know, that wedding still had more problems for me. That first half hour was hard to make it through. The rest of the movie's a little fleet by comparison.
I'm not sure what Bella's point of view would be. Oh, look, I'm look emaciated.
She's on morphine the whole time, so.
Yeah, she's on morphine. She's kind of out of it for much of it. She would probably just be complaining about her body or what have you, but I feel like, or what the taste of blood is like. They're feeding her bags of blood, and this is a problem for them because, well, the Cullens need blood of their own, so they have a quote-unquote action scene where the Cullens have to sneak out to go hunt.
Stuart, you can't just walk on by them feeding Bella blood. Like, yes, they have to get blood bags because the baby needs to be fed. It's feeding off of Bella. She's gone from 110 pounds to 70 pounds with some really bad CGI and prosthetics on her face.
And the baby wants human blood, right?
Yes, because it is part vampire, so we'd assume it wants human blood. I don't know if a human could even digest an entire, like, they give her a styrofoam, like, big gulp.
Yeah, they do.
To drink this, like, she's walking around with a straw sipping blood.
It made me wonder if they did have, like, a 7-Eleven tie-in where all the fans could be like, it is delicious.
Blood cherry Slurpee.
Yeah.
And it's not like your baby is in your stomach. I know that that's what a lot of children believe, is a baby grows in your belly. However, it's in a different anatomical location. So if you do drink blood, it's just going to mix with your stomach acid. I don't think it's going to be unadulterated blood by the time it gets to a fetus. It's not like if you are pregnant and eat a steak, that baby's in there chewing on some fibers and going, yum.
No, I agree, but I'm so happy to see Kristen Stewart sipping blood from a styrofoam cup. Like, I lost it. I almost fell out of my seat in the theater when I watched this one, because I did go to the theater to see this. Like, I got to close out Twilight, my movie watching, like, in the theater. I want to see the fans. I was the only dude there, but I almost fell off my seat laughing so hard as she sipped that blood.
Yeah, and just a word to the wise, in case people really are in twihards and really want to do this. Like, if you drink blood or blood products, you will vomit. Like, the human body doesn't process it.
Which she does, Arnie, for medical accuracy, she does vomit, like, blood all over the place in the book, but they got to keep this PG-13, so they couldn't have that blood spewing.
You can't have vomit in PG-13? Again, this is a very soft PG-13.
Not bloody vomit.
No, but I'm sure you couldn't have it be her blood, but the MPAA would make exceptions for blood that was drank, I bet.
Apparently not. Or maybe they just didn't think it was romantic enough, because again, we're supposed to be seeing the tragedy of this. Now, Arnie, you said, of course they're not going to kill Bella. It's worth pointing out, I point out in the book review, I'll point it out here, they've been tracking Wuthering Heights so much. In Wuthering Heights, spoiler alert, the main character, Catherine, does die mid-book, and her baby becomes the main character. So if you were, you know, of that mindset, you could maybe believe that this is the end of Bella here.
That would be a great way to go. It would wonderfully shock me out of the doldrums I'm sitting in while I'm watching this, but I don't think it's going to happen. You're not going to get rid of your lead star.
You're saying doldrums. I'm having a blast watching this. Like, they made a 70-pound Kristen Stewart puppet to, like, have fall down and break its back. I can't believe this. Like, I can't believe this is what young adults want for their entertainment. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be shocked. I like edgy stuff, but, like, this is your portrayal of get married, have sex on your honeymoon, get knocked up right away, and then that baby's going to kill you. Like, this is a weird body horror movie to me. And, like, I couldn't believe it the first time I saw it. I was shocked, like, that this, like, you read Hunger Games, you know, that's about kids, like, killing each other. Like, okay, I could get into that. Or Harry Potter, it's wizards. There's no real big surprises here. This, to me, is a shock that this is where these books are going to go.
I agree, but the problem with this movie is it edges on competence. And therefore, these wacky ideas don't deliver the punchlines as funny as a less well-made movie would. I'm not finding the giggles in here the way you're describing. I understand that the concepts are ridiculous, but I'm just not able to have fun in a Brown Arrow kind of laugh at this movie way.
And I don't think every Brown Arrow film needs to be The Room. Like, you could have Transformers 2. Like, that's, to me, like, that is so ridiculous. I wouldn't actually give that a Brown Arrow. But I do find, like, these high-level Hollywood productions, when they go awry, to me, that is just as entertaining as a Tommy Wiseau film.
Yeah, I agree with that. There is funny stuff here, but I'm going to side with Arnie. Ultimately, for me, it was because I chose that extended cut. The laughs come too infrequently for this to be like, put this on and you're going to have an uproarious time. You're going to have a very bizarre time. You're going to be like, what the hell? I did not imagine. I never imagined Twilight going this way. I really thought it was going to be a cheesy love story where it was about picking between two hunks. I really never imagined it was about, yes, virginal fears of sex, marriage, and childbirth.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm laughing at some of the more ridiculous effects, but it is the bizarreness. And I think that is something that sometimes is recommendable. Is like, here is something so bizarre, you have to see it. I mean, we've done Zardoz.
And speaking of bizarre, okay, if she has a boy, she's going to name it Edward Jacob. Okay, that makes sense.
Not really. If you are my wife and you say, yes, I'm going to name our son's middle name after this guy who I also had feelings for. No fucking way.
Arnie, maybe this would make it more acceptable, because this gets cut out of the movie and it's part of the book that blew my mind, is when Bella's like in danger of dying, Edward takes Jacob aside and is like, look, talk her into aborting the fetus, and you can knock her up, and you could give her a baby. That's not going to be a dangerous Dracula. Like that, like, I will let you cuck me if you can talk her to an abortion. Like, that is not in this film, but, like, that is the kind of relationship they have in the book.
Yeah, I think it's just that Jacob helps the family get out to hunt. You know, at one point, they are out of blood. There's one blood bag left, and they got to give it to Bella. So Jacob, like, distracts the wolves so that they can, I mean, it's not very exciting, but they try to pretend like it is. So all the family kind of just jumps over a waterfall and gets away or something. And because of that, Edward is in Jacob's, you know, gratitude.
Really terribly filmed. A lot of POV stuff, a lot of over-the-shoulder stuff that I had real trouble trying to figure out, you know, who's running from what now. And
we'll talk about POV when we get to the delivery scene. Like, this was their way of not getting an R rating, because apparently people wanted to see Bella's legs spread open, like trying to push that baby out or something. But they're like, no, we're going to do it from her point of view and just kind of move the camera around, showing what the different actors are doing from what she can see.
I'm not going to lie. I thought, Jacob, the way that you had framed it, like the baby was going to come out of her like Alien. For some reason, I was prepared for some kind of like belly bursting monster scene.
No, I said Edward chews the fetus out of her. And so he does.
I had misunderstood myself. I thought that you had said Bella eats her own placenta. And you know, there are some animals that do that. There, you know, dogs will eat their own placenta after giving birth.
But some women do, FYI. I mean,
so I was waiting for that scene. But when it's POV and you just see Edward fang out, and not even fang out, I guess, just bare teeth, and then start going towards the belly area. Again, if this was more graphic, I could be more laughing at it, but I don't know that I would have really understood what was happening if, Jacob, you hadn't prepped me that this scene was coming.
I mean, I got this the first time I saw it. And again, I'm cracking up because there's like 12-year-old girls in the theater. I'm like, yeah, I guess this is the depiction of labor and giving birth that we want to give our children of today. Like, just let that man rip his teeth into you. Though I don't get why that doesn't fill her full of venom. Like, she's dying. They got the baby out.
I think it does.
No, because he pulls out a whole needle full of his venom and injects her. And I'm like, one, was that what they were going to do all along? Because I thought, like, the romance of being with a vampire getting turned. Like, you got to have the teeth marks. This is where Ed bit me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the prick. Yeah, the sexual nature of being penetrated. Absolutely.
Yeah, but he just had a needle full of the venom. Now, maybe that was in case, because there's a lot of talk about how soon they could inject her where she won't die. But here, they're going to believe that she's dying. And Edward, he just bites her all over the place. There's no rhyme or reason.
I think he's looking for any blood that might still be circulating, and he's doing CPR and all of this. You know, how can a vampire not have sex without bruising you, but can do CPR and not just crush your sternum?
I mean, again, it's all about how much you're controlling yourself. And I think it is Jacob, who is still super strong, doing the chest compressions here.
No, he gives up, and Edward continues, and I thought that, of course, Bella would get up and start walking around, but no, they're going to tease it out a little bit. We're going to play it like she's dead. I mean, again, I never believed it for a second, but that's what they're trying to convince us with.
Well, agree, because there's a part two, but again, another shock for me as I'm watching this the first time. Jacob's angry at that little baby. He's going to go eat it, like he's going to kill it, and instead he walks in and falls in love with the baby.
Yeah, it's a little girl. Does he love the little girl romantically? Renesme here?
Yeah. Renee and Esme, the two mother figures for Bella, combining those names into one awful, awful name.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, Jacob, like, when you imprint, and I guess they tried to set this up in the last film, they talked about imprinting, though I don't remember if they talk about imprinting on a baby. That does get mentioned in the book to try to, like, set this up. But you want to devote your entire life. You're going to be married to it. That's what we saw with Sam and Emily. Like, he left Leia because he imprinted on Emily, even though he scarred her up. Like, they are together forever now.
There's no way to not make this creepy. Even in this PG-13 way, where they're really trying to sanitize and not show the things that are outrageous, there is just something. You put Taylor Lautner getting goo-goo eyes.
Like, falling to his knees.
Yeah, for a baby that he can't wait to marry. That's bad. You know, like, that's bad for the actor. That's bad for the audience. That's just uncomfortable in all kinds of ways.
And it's a bad look for the Mormon religion, given its history.
Agreed. Yes. I just feel like in her trying to dramatize and normalize this moment, it is the goofiest moment of a pretty goofy movie here that he is going to immediately imprint. He was going to kill the baby?
Yeah, he was so mad because the whole thing was he turned against Sam to protect that baby. And then he's like, no, it killed Bella, so I'm going to get my revenge.
Right.
Because at this point, Sam and the wolves want to attack because Bella's dead.
But werewolves have an absolute law. Whoever a wolf imprints on can't be harmed. So it's actually a good thing for Renesmee that Jacob does fall in love with her, because otherwise there'd be a pack of wolves breaking in here. Everyone be crying over Bella.
That sounds so abusive. You love me or else the wolves are going to get you.
Mm-hmm. And we just, have like this dog ripping up a baby ending, which could be fun, but probably not the ending people would expect or want.
And as the stuff with the wolves gets resolved, we're going to do that zoom in. We're going to get real close up on Bella here so her eyes can open up. Like, we did get those scenes of, like, the venom, I guess, putting her back together. Her back pops back in place.
Her heart starts beating. The veins turn to ice because she's a cold one now. And her rib cage, which had been the baby, I guess, as it expanded, was breaking all her ribs. Well, they're healed now. And she has blood red eyes, which, again, the vampires didn't have red eyes often, right? They were kind of brown. I don't know. They changed.
They're golden. They change depending, like, on how hungry they are. And I guess, remember the last film, all that stuff about newborns, she's supposedly going to be super dangerous and super hungry as a newborn.
Right. Yeah. We need to be afraid of her and not happy that she's back alive is maybe a way to read the red eyes.
This movie has been so scary so far.
But you missed the final scene. They go back to the Volturi, which, again, I like this as a bookend.
Yes. Mid-credit scene.
Yeah, I just wondered. I knew this was coming out in the era of Marvel, and I was just like, did they maybe do a credit scene? And sure enough, Michael Sheen is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he gets another message. I mean, they're very old school, written, handwritten messages, which I don't even understand. I think that it's a message coming from Carlisle explaining about the baby.
Yeah, did he call that human secretary and she had to like take the note down? Because Aro's super pissed about the spelling and grammar errors. He's killing the secretary.
Yeah, he's going to kill the secretary for, yeah, the way that the letter is written. You're right. Maybe she, translation, she didn't understand English well. I can't tell you. The point is, Michael Sheen knows about this baby and wants it for himself, is the way I take the scene. But that is actually not the setup for the next movie.
But let's set ourselves up for that final movie. Jacob, Stewart, do you recommend Breaking Dawn Part 1? Jacob.
I said when I first saw this, like, it shocked me. I couldn't believe, again, Hunger Games, you get more or less what you expect. Harry Potter, more or less what you expect. You know, I've watched Maze Runner and Divergent and Percy Jackson because my daughters have read those books and wanted to see the movies. Like, you get pretty much what you would expect in those. This one, when you get to this part, like, it blew me away. Like, this is what the youth of today want. Like, it was a real boomer moment, I guess, for me, even though I was like in my 30s at the time, like really shocked. And I had to write down, like, I found an old review that I just threw up on my own personal Facebook for this, saying, Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1 presents a modern avant-garde challenge to family values as it presents 120 minutes of horror porn depicting rough sex, polyandry, cannibalism, and pedophilia as heroic attributes to the modern teenage girl. A film so disturbing that a father chewing a fetus from the mother's womb is a welcome relief after a parade of horrific behavior. Films like Hostel and Human Centipede would do well to imitate this if they wish to continue to push the envelope of grotesque horror. Like, it was a real surprise to me, and it still is, like, shocking. Like, I know it sounds kind of prudish or whatnot, but, like, they really go for something different here. Again, to me, this is almost a body horror film, and it's hilarious. Like, I'm laughing at all the poor qualities that have been in Twilight movies, but then this one gets just so much more bizarre. To me, like, this is peak Twilight. This was such a fun surprise when I first watched it. It's a fun surprise watching it again, just because it's so bad, so grotesque, just so out there with some of its concepts and ideas that, yeah, I guess it's a brown arrow, but it's a recommend.
Stuart.
I wish I saw the movie you did, Jacob. I wish I'd seen it before I read the book.
Yes, I know.
I agree with you. This is an outrageous proposition. And it is funny that they've taken this gothic notion about what happens to women once they get married off and have sex in a culture where that happens, yeah, right after high school, 18, 19. This could be interesting insight into the mind of Stephenie Meyer if only the director Bill Condon was allowed to be more Candyman. Farewell to the Flesh. I mean, I do feel the PG-13-ness really hinders the outrage. And so it's only conceptually outrageous. It's not visually, viscerally outrageous. There are good moments. I did laugh. And by good moments, I mean bad moments. Stuff that made me laugh. Stuff that made me appreciate, yeah, the brown arrow qualities. But particularly because I saw the extended cut, I do feel like this thing just dragged. And because I know what's coming next, I did kind of resent that they broke it up into two parts. I have to say, not recommend. I want the fan edit where maybe they can, I don't know, I feel like you could tell the whole saga in 2 hours, honestly. But yeah, I feel like there's good stuff here. But overall, this one was a chore.
Jacob, your description there that you wrote is very well written, but I don't know what movie it's about. I mean, it's almost an art in itself to cherry pick those moments out and make it seem like this film is Dead Alive or another early Peter Jackson film, when in fact what you're watching is Beetlejuice at best. I mean, there's just not that much here. There is far more wedding planning than there is anything body horror or amusing. I mean,
you have to admit it was a lovely wedding.
Look, Emmett got me to laugh when he said, "You're 18 and you're never going to sleep again." And Charlie think that's because she's just going to be having so much sex. Like, that got a genuine laugh out of me.
And I could write a similar review where I make this seem like a sequel to J-Lo's The Wedding Planner and completely ignore body horror aspects of it. It just, there's not enough there. You're looking at the cherry on top of a vanilla sundae and acting like it's cherries all the way down. And what it is the sin that Harry Potter had.
I never enjoyed a Harry Potter film as much as this one.
I guess I need to go back and rewatch Mockingjay to see if it did this. But when you take a book and split it in two, part one seems to be universally dreadfully dull because you have no drama. You can't get to the climax. It would be different if they just chose to do this as one long movie. And believe me, I think you could fit this in 2 hours. I think this movie could be about 30 minutes, an hour max of a movie. They have stretched this thing out way too long, and at times it had me contemplating what I've chosen to do with my life. It is a strong not recommend. It's not funny enough to watch. I bet you could make a highlight reel on YouTube of this, about 5 minutes long, from all the Twilight films, and that would be worth watching. But it's certainly not worth watching this just to get to the body horror stuff. I think the first film is funnier with its terrible CGI running up the hill and the spider monkey and the baseball.
And I do admit, like, the joy is, it's very conceptual, like, that this is what we're dishing our kids out, like, as romance and weddings and honeymoons. Like, to me, that is the bizarreness of this and the enjoyment for me dissecting it in that kind of meta way.
And I also want to highlight that you have young girls in your life that you see every day. Did you show them this movie, by the way?
Not this one.
No. Please tell me when you do. I want to hear their reactions. Because I don't have young girls in my life, it probably didn't make the impact that you're having, that this is so shocking. And you're right. When you think about it in terms of developmentally, would I want all the girls that are reading this novel to see this movie? The answer is hell no.
Two questions. First, were those girls in your life when you saw this in theaters back then?
No, they were not.
So you had this feeling without the girls in your life.
Yes, but it may be because I was sitting in an audience and seeing, like, a lot of teenagers there.
And the other thing is, I just don't view this is what we're feeding our children, quote unquote. This is what the children are hungrily going after, and I just hope the parents step in and explain this movie has a lot of false notions that are depicted.
Yeah, if your husband's gonna bruise you on your honeymoon, make sure you're consenting to that. Important lesson to get in here.
Hold on to your lawyer's phone number, please.
But that is it for Breaking Dawn Part 1. We have one last podcast in the Twilight series, and it's the last one of our spring-summer 2022 donation drive as we close it out with Breaking Dawn Part 2. These guys know what's coming. I have no idea. I'm just crossing my fingers that it can be the culmination of, can the fifth film be good if I haven't really liked the first four?
It's gonna be violent, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, it'll be the end. I mean, we can all appreciate that. Having read the book, I am going to tell you, if some of that stuff is in there, it's crazy. But will you like it? I guess that's what we'll find out next week.
So thank you, listeners, for your support. We greatly appreciate it. And until next time, gotta go, got a vampire to kill.
This is the last time you'll ever see me. I won't come back. And you can go on with your life without any interference from me. And it'll be like I never existed, I promise. I'm just sorry I let this go on for so long.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing.
I can read every mind in this room. Money. Sex. Money. Sex. Cat.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
I'm never gonna get enough of this. We don't get tired. We don't have to rest or catch our breath or eat. I mean, how are we gonna stop?
We hope you enjoyed the show.
I'm glad I amuse you.
Go to NowPlayingPodcast.com each week to hear our hosts review the original novels on which these movies are based.
You're not really into this, are you?
I actually really just want to go to this bookstore.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
But I can't help myself. You are so mouth-watering.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm down with the kids.
Oh yeah, dude. You're the bomb.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I like my own personal brand of heroin.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Bella, they're not even alive. It makes me sick. Better you really be dead than one of them.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Everything about me invites you in. My voice, my face, even my smell.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Can't trust vampires. Trust me.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
I have to report a crime. The Collins. They've done something terrible.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Oh, you see, there's no law broken here.
Agreed. But does it then follow that there is no danger?
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I have never met anyone more prone to life-threatening idiocy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
My time as a human was over. But I never felt more alive.
Could Superman have sex with Lois, or would, like, super sperm just blow out her back and kill her like a gun, you know? Remember having those conversations in fourth grade, Stuart?
No. I never had that conversation.
You never talked about Superman sperm?
No.
Well, I was having that conversation, maybe not with you, but I had that conversation while still in elementary school.